What I want to do is talk to you about the first part of our trip to Turkey and give you some key findings. And in doing that, I'm going to do a very brief presentation on two issues, what we found and what are the implications of that for our U.S. government. What we found, of course, bear in mind that this trip was mainly to learn and to discuss Turkish foreign policy, so most of my findings are going to be relevant to U.S.-Turkish relations and Turkish foreign policy, with some, of course, domestic policy here and there, but mostly I think this will be a discussion on U.S.-Turkish relations and Turkey's ties to the Middle East. As Rob said, we spent 3 days in Turkey, two in Ankara, one in Istanbul, though I think personally I would have spent two in Istanbul, one in Ankara, for obvious reasons. We had great meetings. We were pampered, wined and dined, and we had access to anybody we wanted to see. We saw members of the government. We saw members of the Turkish press. We met with the Turkish business elite in Istanbul. We got a really good cross-section of how Turkey looks at its relations to the U.S. and to the Middle East. What was really interesting is that as the trip progressed, I got the sense that this is, if you want really good intelligence about the Middle East, you go to Ankara. And here's what I mean by that. Each of these meetings, we had the issue of Iran and Syria and other big topics come up. And every time we had a meeting with Iran, consistently across the board, people would say, yes, they have some concerns about Iran. Some would say they have serious concerns. Some would say they have some concerns. But in the end, they would say, don't worry about the bomb. Iranians are not making a bomb. And would leave the meetings. This is before the national intelligence estimate, mind you. And would leave the meeting surprised and would go to the next meeting and ask the same question again. And we were surprised, of course, based on what we knew up to that time, was that this was a revelation. And yet, in the end, I think we left Ankara, went to Israel, and news came out, the national intelligence estimate, that weaponization, according to the estimate, was out. And I think that was an interesting finding we had in Ankara, perhaps telling you that people in Ankara are more in tune into the Middle East today than they were in the past. Here are some of our key findings. Let me move on after this anecdote. I'll go through the findings, and then, as I said, I'll come quickly to a discussion of what they mean for the U.S. government. The Turkish economy, in good shape, doing really well. Turkey is more prosperous than it has ever been. Income per capita is about $10,000 on a purchasing power parity basis. The country has much improved European infrastructure. People were very impressed with what we found. This is our second trustee trip to Turkey in the last 10 years, so we saw a lot of progress based on what we saw earlier. That was very good news, and we got a lot of positive feedback based on that in Istanbul when we met the business elite. The second issue, and I would say the most important issue that we heard in all our discussions, regardless of who we met, including meetings in Istanbul and Ankara, was the PKK question, the centrality of this issue for Turkish foreign policy. We expected to hear about the PKK issue in our discussions, but it dominated most of our conversations. In fact, it probably was the center of all our conversations, and I think this is important. First, I think the PKK issue shapes now, to a large extent, Turkish foreign policy, especially Turkey's ties to the Middle East. The Turks' perspective of their neighbors in the Middle East is largely through the prism of the PKK. It has been like that in the 90s, but it has stayed like that in the 90s, although the landscape of the Middle East changed quite a bit. So we heard, for example, from people about how much they appreciated Syria's cooperation with Turkey on the PKK issue. And this generally seems to have created a lot of positive feelings towards Syria because they're helping Turkey against this terrorist issue. We heard about Iran, not as strong, but similar sympathies towards Iran, the fact that Iranians are bombing PKK camps in Iraq, according to the press, on a daily basis, and how much people appreciate that. It's a magnet issue in the sense that I think that the way the Turkish political elite looks at this issue is whoever is helping Turkey against the PKK is a friend, and that really goes to a large extent to Syria and to some extent to Iran. And whoever is not a friend, and that goes, A, for the Iraqi Kurds, and B, unfortunately, for the United States. People were incredibly, incredibly focused on the issue that American action on the PKK had not been forthcoming for the last 5 years, but they were very appreciative of the action that has just started, cooperation. The United States is now sharing with Turkey what is called actionable intelligence, real-time intelligence, of PKK presence and movement in northern Iraq and the PKK's cross-border movements into Turkey, and Turkey has taken some action using that intelligence to counter the threat. That was very positive. I think we heard from a lot of people how much they appreciated that, but there were a lot of people who had looked at the last 5 years of little cooperation. And the fact that some cooperation has started now, they were skeptical, to say the least, saying, well, let's see what comes out of it. Hopefully something concrete will. And that was not surprising, but a key finding. We've done a lot of work at the Institute on the PKK about seeing how this, to a large extent, shapes Turkey's relations to the Middle East. Second, I think the PKK issue also dominates Turkish domestic politics. In fact, it is the key issue of domestic concern right now. It's interesting because only about a few months ago, the big debate on Turkey was on secularism and religion and politics. That seems to have been suppressed, not disappeared, but suppressed by the PKK issue, which now unites the Turks across the political spectrum on how to deal with terrorism and the threat the PKK poses, the fact that the organization, before our trip, killed about 10 Turks on a weekly basis. Now attacks have subsided a little bit. But we saw that in general that was the unifying issue which had suppressed the issue of secularism, religion, and politics. In a way, my suggestion is to look at the PKK issue and the debate on religion and politics and secularism in Turkey as two alternate cycles, in the sense that when one peaks, the other one dips. And so long as the PKK issue was at a peak, that keeps the debates on secularism and other concerns and political tensions in the country also at a minimum, almost suppressing them. Finding number three, U.S.-Turkish cooperation in Iraq and in Afghanistan. We had very in-depth, sincere, frank conversations across the board, testifying to the great amount of cooperation going on in Iraq and Afghanistan. We have plenty of numbers, figures, just a lot of good stuff going on in that regard. And, you know, we were happy to see that. Fourth, though, accompanying the strong cooperation, we heard, going back to the discussion on PKK, strong resentment towards the United States, what some people would call rising anti-Americanism, what I would say, you know, present anti-Americanism. It's not rising anymore, it's there. And I think recent developments such as House Resolution 106, also known as Armenian Genocide Resolution, have only added to the lack of confidence in Turkey in the bilateral relationship. This is one issue we heard in every conversation we had, without a mistake. In fact, most people would open their statements with how much they oppose this issue and how they thought this would shatter U.S.-Turkish relationship. It was a point everybody felt like they had to make before we would start the conversation. Last major finding, foreign policy, Turkish foreign policy towards the Middle East. It is my sense that Turkey's relations to the Middle East, the transformation that we saw in the last 5 years, improving ties to Iran and Syria, a new perspective on Hamas, the Hamas invitation to Ankara. It is my sense that after that transformation, Turkish foreign policy towards the Middle East has settled on a new platform. And by settled, I mean, you know, when you go to Ankara, you talk to people, you pretty much hear similar views across the board, especially on Syria. There was not a single meeting in which, you know, we did not hear people saying, well, Syria may not be the ideal state, but its hands should be held. It should be promoted to become a responsible actor in the international system. And we can do that. We have the means. We have ability. We have influence. And that, I think, shows that there's a, you know, pretty much consensus. I wouldn't say it's the unanimous opinion, but pretty much consensus, such as on Syria, which is where the new Turkish foreign policy seems to have settled. On Iran, the consensus is not as powerful. There were a lot of objectors, but pretty much across the board, once again, we heard people who so much appreciated Iran's support to Turkey against the PKK that they were able to forego past problems with Iran, such as Iran's support for PKK until the last decade, its support for Islamist terrorist cells inside Turkey. People looked at Iran as a new blank page, through a new blank page, in other words, and generally appreciated that cooperation, though we did hear from a number of circles concerns about Iran's attempts to nuclear weaponize and what that meant for Turkey. That's, I would say that, therefore, that the consensus on Iran does not really exist, but it's emerging. Consensus on Syria does exist, and it seems to have reached a plateau. On Arab-Israeli issues, we'll talk more about that later on, the general consensus, and I think this is where you find the least amount of divergence between the U.S. foreign policy and Turkish foreign policy. Across the board, we heard people saying that they do want a two-state solution, this is what they want to achieve at, and they are supportive of the Annapolis process, and that Turkey is able to, you know, talk to both sides. They were able to bring Abbas and Peres to Ankara for a meeting in the Turkish parliament just before our visit. In fact, both leaders addressed the Turkish parliament one after the other in the same session, and people, you know, use that as a sign of saying, well, look, good things are happening This is Turkey's leverage, and therefore Turkish policy on that issue is not in any kind of divergence with the United States. But an issue where there is significant amount of divergence is the policies on Hamas and Hezbollah. We found out, first of all, that there is no consensus in Ankara on these issues. There are some people in the government, of course, who are saying that these contacts are not valid, perhaps, but they should continue because Turkey made a point, and they do seem to continue behind the screens. Others in the opposition parties, can't give you names, but generally across the board, were very critical of the government's contacts, continuing contacts with Hamas. And we have many people who characterize both groups outright as terrorists and said, that's it. It's that simple, no need for conversation. And we had some others who said, well, continuing contacts with Hamas is not such a bad thing. So whereas I think you have consensus on Syria, an emergent consensus on Iran, you don't have this kind of a consensus on this other big issue, Hamas and Hezbollah. There's a lot of debate over there in Ankara. Last point, the implications of the major findings, these five major findings, the economy, the PKK, U.S.-Turkish cooperation, anti-Americanism, and new Turkish foreign policy, suggestions as to the implications of that for U.S. foreign policymakers. One, I think, is that the Turkish-U.S. cooperation in Iraq and Afghanistan, notwithstanding, anti-Americanism is U.S. foreign policymakers' biggest challenge in Turkey. It's kind of paradoxical because on the one hand, there's so much stuff going on. We have numbers on everything the Turks and Americans do together in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere in Kosovo, and you name the theater, they're there together. But on the other hand, you have these such high numbers of resentment towards U.S. foreign policy and towards the United States as well. So I don't think it's about U.S. foreign policy. I don't think this is anti-U.S. foreign policyism anymore. I think there's an element of anti-Americanism, unfortunately, as well. And that's a challenge. That's up to the U.S. foreign policymakers to decide how they tackle that. It will probably take the cooperation to be aired out to the Turks because there's so much good stuff going on that a lot of people are not aware of this. There seems to be a disconnect that if you talk to policymakers in Turkish bureaucracy, you get all these numbers about all the cooperation going on. And then you go out to the streets and you talk to people, common Turks, they think that the two countries are not doing anything together. And I think it's that disconnect that needs to be bridged for the people to find out what their country is doing with the United States and why it is doing that and why that is in Turkey's interests. That would probably make them more supportive of the relationship that's going on. But unless that disconnect is bridged, I think it's going to be hard to face this new phenomenon of anti-Americanism. Second, the issue of PKK. This is the key issue in Turkish foreign policy. It is the key issue in Turkish domestic politics. And there's a risk there for the United States as well as an opportunity. The opportunity is there's cooperation going on, and there are signs that more stuff could happen. And all of that will be received extremely well in Turkey. So far, what the Iranians have done is any time you had an American official who said the right things on the PKK, committed to working with the Turks to face off the terror issue, the Iranians have used any time such a comment was made, in other words, to debase these comments. They're very good at the use of PKK issue for public diplomacy purposes. They not only fight the PKK, they not only bomb its camps, but they also bomb its camps when U.S. officials say that they will fight the PKK. So, you have Secretary Rice who goes to Ankara and says, we're going to fight the PKK. That goes into the Turkish papers. The same day, Iranians bomb camps. So guess what happens? In the front page of the papers, you have headline news which says Iranians are bombing the camps, and you have 12-page news which says Rice said that they will bomb PKK or they'll fight PKK. And I think the Iranians have grasped on to the public, the way this issue is perceived by the public, and used it incredibly well over the last 5 years to create sympathies. We heard from a number of people, also their polls testifying to this, that as a result, for example, Ahmadinejad is not an unpopular leader in Turkey. Seems to be quite popular, and part of that could be explained through this strategy. The opportunity, of course, is to promote further U.S.-Turkish cooperation against PKK, and some of it is happening, and more should be in the making. The risk is the domestic qualities, domestic aspects of this issue, and here's how it goes. The government now is pursuing a strategy where they're actively combating PKK in northern Iraq, the AKP government, that is, while at the same time, floating balloons about, what if there's a general amnesty? What if there's a limited amnesty for PKK members? In other words, they're searching for political solutions to the problem as well as military solutions. That's up to the Turkish government to decide. We don't know where it's going to go yet. But from the way I think, if you look at the past behavior of the PKK, when it entered such processes of political or politicization, that it would, you know, resort to violence when it felt that it was not getting what it wanted in the political process. And I think this is a general behavioral pattern for most terrorist groups. Political route is seen as an alternative to violence, but it's not the alternative. It's something you resort to, but you go back to your violence if you feel that you're not getting what you want at the negotiation table. There's a risk that's involved that the PKK might come for the strategy and then go for, you know, whatever the government is trying to do with the politicization. But there's a risk that the process might collapse as well. And, you know, we heard in Ankara and elsewhere that whether or not the U.S. government seems supportive of this process might have implications for it in the future, because then it will be seen as an actor that has helped politicize PKK, a process that might fail. I think that it will be the better interest of the U.S. government to look at the process from the Iraq side of it, in other words, counterterrorism aspect of it, fight against it, against PKK's presence in Iran, but leave the business of Turkey side of it to the Turkish government, because whatever the Turks do, it's going to be their doing, and it's failure or victory, it's going to be their decision. And I think the U.S. government will be served better to stay out of the process, but that's yet to see, as I think the issue clarifies further. Thank you so much.